Next case on our calendar is A18-1714, I'm sorry, A19-0343, State of Minnesota versus Richard Kelly. And so parties, looks like both counsel are ready. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 15 minutes for initial arguments and 15 minutes by respondent, 5 minutes for rebuttal, so choose. And you may proceed, counsel. Please state your name for the record also and the party that you are representing.
May it please the court, my name is Kenneth D. Butler. I represent the appellant in this matter. I submit that this case is one of statutory interpretation. We're dealing with an eminent domain action, which is the underlying genesis of this situation. And the statutes in issue are Minnesota Statutes 117.031, 117.195, and Section 549.09. At issue here, justices, is whether the appellant had met the threshold for attorney fees that are awarded or allowed or permitted under Section 117.031, which states that the final judgment in an eminent domain proceeding shall be determined as of the date of taking, and no attorney fees shall be awarded if the final judgment or award does not exceed $25,000. The operative language in that particular statute, I submit, is the word final. Now, in MnStat Section 117.195, it states that the interest rate of interest shall be determined under Section 549.09. It doesn't say that the rate of interest shall be determined under 549.09 subdivision C, but under 549.09. Why is that important? That's important because 549.09 subdivision A states that the interest shall be calculated and added to the final judgment or award. The award in this instance was determined by the commissioners on November 14th of 2018. Subsequently, that award plus the interest, or the award in that the commissioners awarded was around $24,552. That plus the interest would then exceed the $25,000 threshold set forth in 117.031.
Is it significant, Mr. Butler, that the 117 statute says the rate of interest should be determined by 549.09, and in fact it's subdivision C of that statute that talks about the statutory rate? So under what basis should we, if we read the language, the rate should be determined, under what theory should we consider all of that statute in play?
Well, Justice, the Section 117.195 refers generically to 549.09, not to 549.09 subdivision C that speaks particularly to the calculation of the rate of interest. If that had been spelled out with cogently spelled out, I concur with you, Your Honor, that would be a limitation to my argument, but it does not. It applies to the entire statute. And we know under our canons of law that we have to apply the plain meaning of the statute and the entire statute in its entirety. And here in this instance, 549.09 sub A states that once the interest has been calculated, it shall be added to the final judgment or award. And if you take that language, the final judgment or award as set forth in that statute, and revert it back to 117.031, which states that the final judgment award shall be determined as of the date of taking. And so one has to conclude that the date of taking, why that becomes relevant is that the date of taking, that's when the interest begins to accrue. And if you look at it like that, then the interest that is calculated under 549.09 added to the award as set forth by the legislature in the 1984 amendments to the changes to the eminent domain law, as I set forth in my brief.
Counsel, I want to start. you start with 549, but really the statute starts with 117.03.1, right?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Sure. You start, your argument starts with 549.09, but doesn't really the statutory analysis begin with 117.03.1?
Oh, I agree, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So starting with looking at 117.03.1, my first question to you is that language, when it talks about the final judgment award of damages, is that language ambiguous or unambiguous? Because I, from my perspective, the statutory analysis has to start with that first question.
And I think that's an excellent point. In my opinion, I submit that it's not ambiguous, that the plain meaning of that language is the final judgment or award. In this case, we're talking about a final award. And the final award, unlike respondents' argument, in my opinion, as I submit, includes the award that was determined by the commissioners and the interest added to that award to culminate in the final award.
Okay, but the language there says that the final judgment award of damages does not exceed $25,000. It doesn't say anything about interest at all.
No, it doesn't, I admit that.
Okay, so if we assume that that language is unambiguous, then we look at the plain meaning of those words.
I would concur with that, Your Honor.
So what is the plain meaning of the word damages?
In my opinion, the plain meaning of the word damages is the diminution in value as determined by the commissioners with respect to the real property itself, together with the interest allowed by statute.
Okay, what support is there for your definition of damages to include interest, though?
My support is 549.09 subdivision A, where it speaks to the interest once calculated shall be added to the final award.
Okay, but that...
Or damages.
Okay, now you're jumping to 549 to interpret it. I want to focus on 117.09, not 549.09.
117.031?
I'm sorry, 117.031. When it says final award of damages, what is damages? How is damages defined? For example, in Black's Dictionary. How is damages defined in Black's Dictionary? Or under any dictionary definition?
The damages are those elements that have been sustained by the condemnee as a result of the condemnation action. And it can be the diminution in value of the real property. It can be any adverse consequences as a result of the taking. Those are damages. And I understand where you're going with this, that one could argue you could separate damage from interest under 117.031, because it doesn't speak to interest in that particular statute.
Right.
But it is part of the eminent domain chapter, which also includes 117.195, that says that any award of damages shall include interest from the date of taking, and that interest shall be determined under 549.09. So one could argue that damage then includes interest, because 549.09 specifically says interest shall be added to the award, to the judgment or the award.
Okay, what about the Gannon's case, though?
The
Gannon's case. Because the Gannon's case specifically says that damages award...
Absolutely. And that Gannon case was decided in 1966, before all these overhaul of the eminent domain statute parts that we're talking about today.
Right.
All that Gannon basically said, that there's a presumption that interest shall not be part of an award. In that case, it dealt with a jury verdict that included interest. But it was a presumption that can be overturned.
Right.
Now, the Gannon court cited the Ford Motor Company case and a Bruins case, which basically don't add a lot of substance to our argument here today. But it rested its laurels on the fact that there's a presumption that an award doesn't include interest.
Right.
As I stated in my appellate brief, albeit somewhat short, that presumption can be challenged.
Right.
And that's what I'm doing here today.
Okay, and I agree with you. The presumption certainly can be challenged. And I think in your brief you argue that the subsequent statutes basically overrided that.
That's pretty much it, Your Honor.
But if the legislature, the court can come up with a decision, but then the legislature can say, you know what, we disagree with the idea, the concept that damages does not include interest. Therefore, we're going to rewrite the statute in a way that it's clear that damages includes interest. But that didn't happen here.
And the corollary to that didn't happen either, Your Honor. It didn't go out, the legislature did not go out of its way to give credence to the Gannon's decision either. It left open the interpretation that I submit to the court today as the applicable interpretation of the law taken as a whole.
Right, but you initially started out saying that you thought that the statute, the 117.031 statute, was unambiguous. That means there's only one reasonable interpretation. And if that's the case, then we look at the plain meaning of the words. The plain meaning of the words say that it refers to the final award of damages does not exceed $25,000. There's no reference in that statement to damages including interest. And that's what the Gannon case said in the prior version of the statute, that there's no presumption that damages includes interest.
Well,
so if the legislature wanted to override Gannon, which it could have, there's nothing in the plain language here indicating that interest, that damages includes interest.
Your Honor, as I indicated in my appellate brief, when the Gannon decision was decided, it looked at 117.16 that said that any award of damages shall bear interest. It didn't, that was pretty much it, and then left it to the discretion of either the judge or whoever third party would do it. When that statute was amended by section 117.195 superseded 116.16, it said we look to 549.09 to determine the rate of interest. And again, I get back to that same point that I've been fairly redundant on. I can only submit in a thoughtful response to your question is that although 117.031 does not mention interest, you have to take the statute as a whole and incorporate 117.195 into 117.031.
Right, and there it talks about all damages allowed on this chapter shall bear
interest. Right.
But it doesn't say anything about how the final award of damages for purposes of 117.031 shall include interest. It just says interest shall be tacked on, and same thing with 549. It's added to the judgment to award. Added seems to indicate that it's something different. It's over and above the judgment award that's referred to in 117.031.
I think one could argue that final judgment incorporates the totality of the award.
Well, one could argue, but what language in here, and specifically when we look at the statutory history, what the statute and what the Gannon case particularly said in terms of damages does not include interest, how does the new statute override Gannon?
Your Honor, I would submit that under 117.131, the operative language is the final judgment or award shall be determined as of the date of taking, and no attorney fees shall be awarded if the final judgment or award of damages does not exceed $25,000. I think the operative language is the final judgment or award, the final award. And I think that's unambiguous language. And the final award is composed of two parts. One, the award of the commissioners, and two, the interest allowed under 549.09 as required under 117.195.
So looking at that, there are a couple of different ways to read this, I think. One is final judgment or award of damages. I'm not sure what final modifies, if it modifies both.
That's correct, Your Honor.
You might argue differently,
but I'm thinking. No, that's fine.
So, was there a final judgment entered in this case?
No, there was not, and that's an anomaly, and I don't have an explanation for that, but what was filed was the award of the commissioners. Award of the commissioners, and then what the appellant received was a check in excess of $25,000 because the interest had been added to it. So when you look at it and look at it in a from my perspective, then the final award is what was what the appellant recovered. It yes.
The award of damages itself doesn't get you there. So you need the word final to modify either the judgment.
That's right.
Or the award of damages.
That's right.
Okay. So in your view, like judgment or award of damages are sort of mean the same thing and final modifies both and it's sort of the end of the it's just whatever the road is.
You've done a better job than I in explaining my position. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank
you.
It may please the court, Assistant Attorney General Jeff Thompson on behalf of the state of Minnesota. And as you can tell, I have a cold right now, so I apologize. I have a cough drop in, and I'm going to try to keep my voice going as long as I can here. Let me start off right away by correcting something that counsel just said. Counsel said that the final check received was over $25,000. That's not correct. The state had made a quick take payment of $9,000 at the beginning of the case under 117.042. So the final check was for the award, commissioner's award, less than $9,000 quick take, and then the $2,000 interest on top of that. So the check issued by MnDOT was for $17,000.
But that
If we're looking at the final award of damages, the award of damages was $24,552. If there was a judgment, though, you don't enter judgment on amounts that are already paid. You enter judgment on amounts that are unpaid. So a judgment, had there been a judgment, it would have been for $17,631, not $25,000.
So you're talking about final judgment, though.
Yes.
Depending on which way the
yes. Statute is. Yeah. And well, then you're not going to qualify under the final judgment, but you will under the award of the award of damages. You would.
It's interesting because it's written that no fee shall be awarded if the final judgment or award is under 25. I mean, in one case, it would be under 25.
Yeah.
It's not written positively that you get damages if one of them exceeds it. It says no award.
If the award exceeds 25, yes. If the award of damages. And one thing is, in eminent domain, we usually don't see final judgments until after a jury trial or a court trial. And so we have the award, most cases end after the commissioner's phase and don't go on to a jury trial. And so we don't see awards entered on those cases. If the condemner doesn't pay the amount within the statutory time period, it's 70 days after a commissioner's award, then the landowner has the ability to seek the court to overturn the hearing of the order granting petition and return the land to the owner. So that's the statutory process. And I believe the 70 limit is in 117.195.
And that gets to the question I've been thinking about as I was listening to Mr. Butler's argument. This is a quick take eminent domain, correct?
Yes.
So pursuant to that process, the state took this property right away, but the value wasn't determined for what, a couple of years?
Yes.
And so these folks lost the use of their property for a couple of years before they were compensated fully for it. So what I'm getting at, my question is, and no one's, I don't think, cited it in the brief, and I assume that's probably because you both thoroughly researched it and there isn't any law on it, but you'll correct me if I'm not, but is there anything out there that differentiates the way we calculate awards between a standard eminent domain where someone might not be without the use of their property for 2 years and a quick take eminent domain where they are and that's why they get interest to partially compensate for that time in between when they've lost their property and when they're paid for it? It seems to me there's a better argument that interest should be part of the award in a quick take because of those basic facts that the state has the authority to say, this property is now mine for this right away, and we'll pay you down the road sometime for it when we figure out what the amounts do. A standard eminent domain, like you said, you wouldn't deal with that because there'd be a trial and there'd be a judgment at that point, and that's when the transfer would take place.
Two things.
My question is, is there anything that differentiates how we look at damages between quick take and a standard eminent domain?
No, the formula for determining damages is the same in a quick take and a standard take case. The
So it would be for the legislature to change that if it seemed unfair.
Correct. The legislature could have written 117.03.1 to say award of damages plus interest. That would have been very easy for them to do. There is time lag, though, in a standard case as well, because as set out in 117.195, the as amended in 1971, when the standard, prior to that amendment, it was after the commissioner's award, that's the date that title transfers to the condemner. And then if that's appealed, it goes to a jury trial. You know, and we've been bogged down in cases on appeal for years, right? So it can be I've had more than 3 or 4 years after appeal before we finally get to the jury trial. So we'd have that same sort of time lag possible between commissioner's award and trial or quick take and trial. You know, there's just always, with quick take, there's always gonna be just that little extra window depending on how fast you get to the commissioner's award and the appeal.
So counsel, I'm gonna ask the question I asked opposing counsel is, do you think 117.031 is ambiguous or unambiguous?
I think that it is not ambiguous. That award of damages means the damage is awarded. And in this case, $24,552.
What about the potential ambiguity that Judge Smith highlighted in terms of, are we talking about the final, whether the word final modifies only judgment or does it modify final award of damages as well? Are those two reasonable interpretations?
I don't think so, because even if we add the word final to award of damages,
okay,
you know, the award of damages comes from one of two sources, the commissioner's or theoretically from the jury, although the jury's does get reduced into a judgment. So whatever the final award of damages is, that doesn't, there's no reason to believe that it includes interest. And it's definitely an amount that that the legislature would have been aware of as a product of the application of this test for damages, and not for the interest, or not necessarily for the interest.
So can you help me out again with the two things, the final judgment and award of damages? Tell me the scenarios where an award of damages, where there's a difference between the two that has a different result then, with respect to attorney's fees. So can you have a situation where the award of damages is under 25 that the final judgment exceeds the award of damages?
I don't think you can have a case where the final judgment ever exceeds the award of damages. You know, if we're reading award of damages to be what the commissioners produce, then it could, because a jury always has the ability to go higher. So in that case, it would. If we're reading award of damages to be the product of the damage is determined whether by commissioners, jury, or court on a court trial. In that case, the final judgment can never exceed the
Yeah. The two things, final judgment and award of damages, what are the scenarios that the legislature has in mind? If you're setting a limit that has those two.
Yeah. I think that what they're doing is, when they're saying final judgment, they're talking about after a jury trial. When they're saying final award, they're talking about commissioner's award. In that case, it makes sense.
Okay. So you think it relates to the procedure, the posture of the case?
Yes. Yes.
And can I just add, again,
Yes.
That case, basically, as I recall it, said no, the jury doesn't decide the interest, right?
Correct.
Yep. Is that very relevant to the issue before us now? Because no one's thinking that the jury should decide.
It's very relevant for us to the extent that we have to get to any kind of statutory construction, and I don't think we do because it's unambiguous and award of damages means damages awarded. But if we do move beyond that and move to statutory construction, 645.17(4) says that we look to when the highest court has construed language, and it says in subsequent laws on the same subject. So even if there's a difference between 117.16 and 117.195 as amended in 1971 or as amended again in 1984, it's still on the same subject of interest on an eminent domain case. So we're still bound by that Supreme Court interpretation. And the Supreme Court says, the law presumes that it, meaning interest, will not be included in the award. It's not part of the award. So whenever the legislature enacted 117.031, which in 2006, it would have been aware that the Supreme Court has said interest is not part of the award. Correct.
So it's not, I get it now, all right, so that's helpful. And let's circle back 1 second. The difference between a final judgment and jury trial and then the commissioner's award, the distinction that you made in the statute. So when we look at 549.09, it says that A, subdivision 1A, that interest until judgment is finally entered shall be computed and added to the judgment or award. Let's put ourselves in the final judgment world. Why wouldn't that, if it were, and I know we're not in that in this case, but if we were in a case of final judgment, meaning, you know, at the end of a jury trial, why wouldn't that include interest? If 549.09 says you add interest to the judgment, and then you get a final
sure. judgment. Sure, and when you look at 549.09, it's subdivision one, before we get to the paren A, it says when owed and rate. And that's describing what's happening in the subsequent subdivisions A, B, and C. A and B deal with when owed, C deals with rate. So we never get to 1A or 1B because they don't deal with rate, they deal with when owed. And we don't have to get to them because that's answered not in 549.09(1A) or B. It's answered in 117.195. 117.195 tells us when interest is owed in a special proceeding, eminent domain action under Chapter 117. And it refers to 549.09 only for rate. Now, there isn't a spot cite to 1C, but by saying rate, they mean rate. And the added to has nothing to do with rate. Even if there is some aspect of rate contained within 1A, it's not the added to part.
Okay, so it's conceivable. And that's why I was trying to figure out, would you get a wildly different result on attorney's fees if you had an award of damages versus a final judgment? And you're saying, no, you're never going to add interest to a final judgment because that comes from sub A in 549.09. It doesn't come from C, and the eminent domain statute doesn't tell you to add.
Correct.
Is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And, you know, a final judgment at the end of an eminent domain case will also include appraisal reimbursement. There's some paybacks on mortgage early payment plan. There's all kinds of things in Chapter 117 that get paid to a landowner. None of those are damages. Right? We're looking at what are. No.
What do you do?
Well, you look at the damages that are that make up the damages component of the judgment versus all of those.
Oh, okay. So then we get to, you think of damages modifies the final judgment.
I believe so, yes.
Final judgment of
damages. Yeah. I'm reading final modifying both and of damages modifying both too.
I see. Okay.
And I think that's the natural reading. But you know, appellant's case hinges entirely on the added to language in subdivision 1A, and we just never get there because that has nothing to do with rate.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that again?
Sure. Their entire case hinges on the added to language in 549.09 1A. We never get to 1A because that has nothing to do with rate. 117.195 references 549.09 for rate. They could have said rate and process. The legislature could have said rate and process, and that arguably would have incorporated 1A too, but the legislature did not. It only said rate. I believe so. And the reason why I think you have to have of damages on both is, let's say that the commissioners award $200,000 and then a jury awards $20,000. You know, if we don't have that final going to, I just lost my train of thought there.
You have two awards of damages.
Yeah, and it's only whichever one of those, because we never get to a jury award if there's no appeal. And in that case, it's the commissioner's award that stands. But if there is an appeal, then we move on to the ultimate final determination of damages. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Very brief. First of all, the taking in this case, I think, was occurred in the year 2015. The hearing before the commissioners occurred in November of 2018, over 3 years, for which the interest and the damage award were calculated. Secondly, the Gannon's decision did not did not interpret a law. The Gannon decision is limited to a presumption that's relevant and cogent to our argument here today. So the presumption that's set forth in MnSTAT section 645.17 sub 4 is not applicable at all, because you're not dealing with an interpretation of the law by the court in Gannon. 117.195,
how do you address 645.17 parent 4 though?
Right.
So you're saying that that doesn't apply?
No, it does not apply.
But I'm kind of struggling with that, because it says, quote, when a court of last resort has construed the language of the law of the legislature and subsequent laws on the same subject matter intends the same construction to be placed upon such language. Isn't that the case that we have here? The legislature made subsequent laws on the same subject matter.
All that the court in Gannon said was that there's a presumption that interest is not part of an award. That is plus, or not even plus, but besides the award, there shall be interest. But I don't see where it's construing a law to come to that conclusion when it's all based on a presumption. Interrogation of a particular language in the law. It's a presumption.
It's a presumption, but it's a presumption that's directly applicable to the case, to the issue that we have in this case. Does damages include interest? And the Supreme Court very clearly in Gannon said damages does not include interest. And so how is 645.17?
Well, because, Your Honor, again, because 549.09 was not in existence at the time that Gannon was decided, that says that that interest shall be added to an award, to a final award.
Going to 549.09, then why do we even need to consider 1A as opposing counsel?
Because 117.195 states that the rate of interest shall be determined under 549.09, not 549.09 sub C, but 549.09. Obviously, a cursory reader of that section could reasonably conclude that 549 549.09A and other parts of that statute are all applicable, incorporated into this discussion by virtue of 117.195.
But 117.195 subdivision 1 talks about, quote, the rate of interest shall be determined according to section 549.09. It's referring to the rate of interest, and the rate of interest is described in 549.091C, correct?
That's correct.
So why do we even need to look at subdivision 1A? Because it's pointing us to 549, I agree with you there, but it's in light of the rate of interest. And the rate of interest is only discussed in 1C, not 1A. Or 1A.
Your Honor, if the legislature had wanted us to confine our scrutiny of 549.09 to subdivision C, it could have done so.
But
it did not do so.
By saying the rate of interest shall be determined? I think it's saying it clearly. Right?
I'm not trying to parse our language here, but
Please do, that's what we're here for.
How can one disregard the language in 1A when it's not separated out by 117.195? If only subdivision C, which reverts to the rate of interest, were to be considered, one would think that it would so state. But 549.09 says the rate of interest shall be determined as calculated under subdivision C and added to the final award. How can one ignore that specific plain meaning by the legislative language in that section? I just have a difficulty with that. Further, I guess I just, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you both. Counsel is very well argued, very well briefed. We'll be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time. In the courtroom, our next case is A-19-0404, City of Duluth versus Duluth Police Union, local number 807. Counsel for appellants, I assume there'll be just one person arguing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You'll have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, and then responding, you'll have 15 minutes, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal if you so choose. Please make sure you monitor the clock to the right when you're at the podium to make sure that you stay within.